Welcome to Combat Gauge, Wargamer Online's official Age of Sigmar podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 4 of Combat Gauge. And tonight I am joined by Jack and Luke.
Hello.
Luke, how are you?
Hello.
Oh, there he is. There he is. Good, good, good. And tonight's subject is all about building armies for Age of Sigmar. And yeah, I'm going to say right from the start, this is our own kind of personal views of what's important to us when we decide to build an army within Age of Sigmar. So we're going to be talking about where you start, how do we decide what faction is right for us, and, you know, looking at some of the things that make it personally interesting for us, whether it's, you know, about the modelling, power and competitiveness, play style, or whether it's about creating something that's unique and individual to yourself. So that's the general subject matter. We've got three, I think, quite different points of view. So, unfortunately, Liam can't join us tonight. So what I'm going to do is kind of work around the table and go through those questions and see what people have to say, really. Yeah, Luke, maybe a good place to start, really, for you. You know, the key factors for you in building a new army, when you get that new army itch. What are your key drivers?
Well, it's obviously the models. To start off with, just trying to find an army that's got a good range of models that I like the look of, but then also trying to make sure the play style of that army fits the way that I play. So I feel that everybody has a different way of playing. So if you might like a model range, but then you pick it up and start playing with it, and then realise, well, it's not for you. So you're just trying to find that balance of, I like these models, and this also fits my play style. That's what they're the main two factors I like to look into before taking the urge just to buy the whole range.
Okay, Jack, what about you, mate?
I think for me, it's story usually for me. So, you know, I'll either be listening to an audiobook or reading a story, and then it gives me an urge to do something. I'm like, oh, wow, that character's actually really cool. I really do enjoy that character. Oh, I bet I could do an army based on this. Oh, what would be in the army? How can I make it like the book kind of thing? So for me, it's kind of the story behind the army and like the narrative of where my army's going to be going.
Right, okay. Yeah, I can see that actually, knowing you. When you get the new book and you open it up and you're coming back from it and going, I've had this idea for this vampire queen that's doing this, and they're rampaging across and doing that.
Nefrata with an entire female vampire.
That's interesting.
Army.
I've never really considered how much you allow the fluff to feed into your army, really. You know, for myself, and I think it's only fair I say from my own perspective, I think ultimately I end up with some kind of stupid or silly conversion idea. So it's either the opportunity to stick LED lights in something or create some kind of I'm almost thinking a lot of the armies I kind of start to build is I kind of start almost from a diorama perspective. Wouldn't it be cool if I've got a magma drop crawling down the rock face, and, you know, or wouldn't it be cool if I've got a, you know, doing dank hold trogoffs, but they're all a family and they've all got family roles, like the mother, the father, the grandfather, the children. And I suppose in many respects it's kind of similar to you in terms of a narrative approach. Yeah.
I mean, you won't do an army if it can't be a disco rave on the table with LEDs flashing everywhere, all different colours.
So, Luke, coming back to you, mate, where do you start then? You know, as you said, it's about the models to a degree and it's about played style, but how do you start looking for that?
Yeah, well, obviously, like Jack says, I'm like the fluffiest gamer has ever been, so I always make sure the whole army is in the story.
Corn demons in the Zeech army, yeah?
No, Zeech and Lighten in a corner.
Totally makes sense.
It does make sense. If you convert it to look like that army, I think it's fine. It's just a set of rules there.
I think that's an interesting point, is when I see you building an army. I mean, you talked about if the models are great, but I also know that if the models don't quite align with what you want to do, you're quite happy to kind of see the army as a rule set, and then you can kind of build models on top of that rule set. Like, all joking aside, you wanted to put Zeech Enlightened inside a Khorne army, but you didn't put a bunch of Zeech Enlightened on this inside your Khorne-themed army. You took those... What were those Forge World models?
The new Forge World, the Forge World ones.
The Demons of the Runestorm, the Horus Heresy.
Runestorm ones, yeah, that's it.
Okay.
And then stuck some flare wings on them.
Yeah, so you got, you know, demons with wings, basically. So they still, from a rule perspective, they still fit quite nicely within, you know, they fly, because you've given them wings, so it matched the fly keyword. And then they got some pretty nasty talons and stuff going off, which kind of, you know, fills in for the rule gap. And then, you know, I myself did something similar with the Fire Slayers. Well, no, I'm thinking actually with the Fire Slayers, where I brought in the Avocators on Dracolites.
Aether Wings as well, yeah.
Yeah, well, the Aether Wings I didn't do much with. Yeah, that was just spamming Aether Wings so I could grab objectives. Let's be honest.
And you fire your Geminids.
Oh, yeah. Let's not talk about the fireball Geminids.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think it's quite interesting. I think it's quite interesting with armies, you know, when you are lacking that ability and you're trying to make a list, and you're thinking, oh, wow, this list is really good, but the army itself lacks the ability to do this. Oh, I wish there was something I can do to do this. And I think that's when you're making a list, you start looking at the allies. So for me, like, allies is quite a big thing as well, because I look and I'm like, oh, that ally role actually fills my army, but it doesn't really make sense. Why? I don't want these models that look nothing like my army just in there. So how can I make it look like that? Or alternatively, how can I make a story that makes sense? So why is this wizard fighting with my Daughters of Cain or something like that? Yeah.
So does and again, we'll round table this one. Does faction ever be, you know, become important to you guys? Luke, are you a order player only, a chaos player only? You know, and I think that some people out there are. They're quite loyal to their factions, aren't they? But what do you guys think to that?
I think... I'm not so loyal to one faction, really. I mean, I probably would like to stay away from the chaos side of things because I did that so much in 8th edition.
Ah, okay.
I could try to do something else different this time around.
So what were your armies in 8th edition? Did you pretty much cover all the factions, all the chaos factions or sub-factions?
Yeah, pretty much. Did the Khorne, Slaanesh, Zeench.
Right.
Nurgle, Beastmen, Warriors of Chaos.
Okay, you did the whole lot then. All right, fair enough. Jack, how about you?
I mean, well, you know, with my smattering of armies I have here, there, and everywhere, I do have something from every allegiance. So I have, you know, order armies, which is like my Daughters of Cain and my cities. But then I have chaos, which is my maggotkin of Nurgle I'm working on at the minute. I have a couple of destruction with beast claws and orcs. And then I have death as well, which is my soul blights that I'm working on as well. And my flesh eater claws.
So you've kind of embraced
that. Yeah, so for me, but it's like I only enjoy certain aspects of each allegiance. So with... Order. I don't really like enjoy dwarves. It's not really my playstyle. It was always my playstyle in Lord of the Rings, rather. So when I played Lord of the Rings, it was always the Dwarves of Erebor and stuff. That was my army I played. So when I've moved into Sigmar, it's been more elves. So, you know, Daughters of Cain, the Lumineth have got my eye at the minute as well. So it's kind of moving towards something else. I've always been a strong Nurgle player at heart as well. I've always loved Papa Nurgle and his love to spread contagion. So when I go into Chaos, you know, I focus on that quite a bit. Yeah, Khorne's alright. I'm not really a big fan of Slaanesh or Zeech because they kind of just isn't really my playstyle. Whereas Nurgle, I love them. They're all happy. They're running around.
Well, that's a nice segue actually into playstyle, because I think we've covered, you know, does that also inform, you know, what faction is right for you? I mean, Luke, what's your preferred playstyle? Do you have a preferred playstyle? Can you put your finger on that?
I think my main playstyle is MSU, multiple small units. So I did that in 8th edition as much as you could in that kind of game. And I've done that from the very beginning of Age of Sigmar. But I would like to adapt to different playstyles, and because it just gets you better at the game if you learn with different playstyles. It just helps you change the way you play while you're playing.
So, and Jack, you've talked about a commonality between your armies, but what is that playstyle? I could tell you.
Yeah.
I think it's anything that just ignores damage.
Yeah.
With an annoying 5-up roll seems to be your favourite thing.
Oh no, actually, to be honest, my playstyle shifts quite a lot as I do my different armies. So, you know, I've gone from ghouls, which was like, you know, originally I played hordes and hordes and hordes of little ghouls, all supported by dragons, which was kind of like a numbers game. Then my second army was like Beast Chlorators, and that was like minimum size monsters and cavalry, and that was a very fast smash and grab army. And then, which was kind of similar to my Daughters of Cain, you know, very fast but very fragile. But then with my Maggotkin of Nurgle, they're more of kind of just a resilience fight, you know. They get in there, they get stuck in there, and they just don't die, and they wear you down through attrition.
Yeah.
So my playstyle with each army kind of changes, because, you know, like Luke said, I think, you know, I could play 5 different smashing armies, but then I never really learn anything. I never learn a different side of the game, how other things can work. I mean, my empire's a gunline, I have artillery and handguns, and it's like, how can I make shooting work? You know, I've never really played a shooting army before, so how can I make this work?
Yeah. I mean, Luke, do you think it's fair to say that if you do expand your own playstyle and expand your own armies, even if you start small in multiple factions rather than forever dedicating yourself to a single faction, that makes you a better gamer? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think it definitely makes you a better gamer. I think the way that the Age of Sigmar is, I think you always have to have the key things. Like you're always going to have movement, and you're always going to have a little bit of durability in some way or another, if that's durability and lots of little units going in to take one unit out so they take minimum damage, or having a big block that absorbs a lot of damage. But obviously you've got to capture them objectives, and movement is a large part of the game, so you've always got to build your list that has movement. Because like Jack was saying with a shooting list, if you're just a shooting list that's not getting really any movement, you'll just lose to an army that's less powerful on the list, but they'll just beat you on scenario.
Yeah,
I think that's quite interesting. You always have to have the game in mind when you're making a list. So it's really cool making an entire gun line that sits at the back and shoots your enemy. But at the end of the day, all they're going to do is move forward and take all the objectives. And then it kind of like, no matter how much damage you do, they're going to grab the objectives and win on points, because at the end of the day, it is a points game. So I think for me, that's also a thing that I have to have in mind when I'm making my list is, am I going to be able to win scenarios with this list? You know, it's really cool if I've got a bunch of handgunners at the back, but are they going to be able to move up and take objectives? How am I going to get to the enemy's objective?
There's a trap, isn't there, into falling into, I really like the a concept, which is huge amounts of guns in a gun line. It's going to be
fantastic.
Which
in real life is really cool.
Yeah, and you imagine your army arrayed up and just volleying across the field, but it's a trap. Because the missions are designed to punish, in many respects, kind of a mono army.
Yeah.
Something that has mono ability in there. Yeah. But saying that, Luke, I want to bring you in here, because a lot of competitive lists tend to find, in some way, the strongest unit and then field it as much as possible within the 2,000 points you can. I know that's an oversimplification, but you must have to find a balance. That unit needs to be capable in multiple ways.
I don't know what you mean. I don't spam the same unit several times over.
Yeah, you only have one of each unit, don't you?
Yeah. No, seriously. Yeah,
some armies can have lots of different ways of having lots of different units that all combined and buff each other in different ways, so they don't necessarily need to spam one unit.
Right.
Whereas other armies have an effective unit which helps the rest. Some units that don't look so good on paper also work out. So it just depends whether how effective that one unit is. I mean, the way that my list works, obviously Ills have got a lot of stuff in their actual War Scroll themselves, and they buff themselves in lots of ways, so that's why that works. But some armies don't necessarily work just spamming the same thing over and over again.
I mean, we've fallen quite naturally, I think, into ultimately talking about the competitiveness and the power of the army. And yet, we started at a place where we were saying it's about lore, it's about story, it's about modelling opportunity.
See, that's the thing. For me, like, even when I'm making a competitive list, it has to make sense to me. So at the minute I've been making, you know, I'm painting Nurgle, so at the minute I've been making Nurgle lists. And I made one list which was like, you know, Rottigus and the two great unclean ones in a battalion, and then a Blight Sist with a bunch of Blight Kings and a Blight Lord. And I was thinking to myself, but does that really make sense? Does the army make sense? Like, three great unclean ones, that's a lot of power right there. Would Nurgle really do that? Then I was thinking to myself, well, actually, no. How about this? You know, the Blight Lord with his own personal guard of Blight Kings, they've been getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. And at their direst need, he prays to Nurgle for a boon. And Nurgle sends this boon in the form of three most blessed children. So I was like, it does make sense. Of course, Nurgle would do this, and you read the stories, and he does do this. You know, in the Hallowed Knights book, at the end battle, three great unclean ones tear through reality, don't they?
So it's nice to have that in the narrative. Yeah, it's nice to have that. I can retrofitted.
Yeah, I
narrative.
Can do this. I can do this competitive list, and to me, it still feels like it makes sense.
Is there an aspect of role play there for you, though? Does that mean those on the table, you would do different things with those models? Because, you know, if you were to take something like Blackstone Fortress, which has a role play element to it, you know, you're meant to play the models how they would behave, not necessarily if I do this, this, and this. It's you know, you're trying to also reflect the personality of the model. You don't extend it to Age of Sigmar, surely.
Well, it's one of those. It's like, you know, when you think about it, demons at the end of the day have no regard for their own life. So in the game, my great unclean ones are just so unkillable that in the game, they just go up and they tie units down. They go and give hugs to people and they just don't die, which, you know, in the game is what these great unclean ones do. And then you've got the Blight Lords behind them with his Blight Kings all running around trying to actually do the job.
But Luke, I want to bring you in here again, because I know, for instance, that whilst we started at a place of you're looking at the models and you're looking at the opportunity to do something around that modelling, at the same time, the rules have to be right. But I also know that you playtest a lot before you commit to, you know, building models, building all the models, getting into the painting and all the rest. Is that an important part of the motivation for you? Do you need to know the army works on the table before you can be motivated to paint it and get it completed? Because you do, I mean, the Iden of Deepkin army is done to a beautiful level, and I know how much time and effort each individual eel took, but you needed to feel confident, surely, those eels were going to do the job, yeah?
Yeah, I definitely need to, that's what I mean, playing before any kind of tournament or building a list, I definitely proxy a lot before I put all my money into something. I need to make sure it's powerful. But I also like to make sure my list is unique. I don't just like to copy and paste a meta list that someone else has won loads of events with. I like to try and find the basis of something that's good and make it my own.
What you ultimately call the one, yeah? You're always searching for the one in
the
that
one. The one, yeah, always searching for the one.
It's out there, Luke. The one is out there.
So many models go in the bin on the way.
I think you raise a really interesting point about investing time and effort into you know, proxying and pre-playing the army. Mm. One, you can check the playstyles right for you and you're going to enjoy it. Two, you can tell whether it's going to compete. So you don't feel like, you know, that shiny model syndrome where you've spent so much time and effort to build something and you find out it's absolutely awful on the table.
Yeah.
You never field it again, you know, because it just doesn't sit there. But I think there's an economic aspect to that as well, isn't it? You know, the amount of times I think I've kind of like, I remember when I built my Tyranid army, I kind of wanted everything represented.
Yeah.
And then you find out you only really use about a third of it on the table. Mm. It's not a very economical way of building an army.
This time and effort that's gone into something that just never gets used.
Yeah. And you tell yourself, well, I'm going to use them in a narrative play or in a friendly match. But, you know, if some units are so bad, you just...
Yeah.
It's so galling.
It's so hard
to
bring yourself to play them, yeah.
Okay. Luke, I mentioned there your Iden of Deepkin army, which is, I think, a very unique-looking army. You know, it's for those people who haven't seen it, it's heavily converted. So you've combined Nighthaunt and Iden of Deepkin into this, you know, this wonderful backstory of a, you know, an Idenef enclave. I can't remember if that's the right word.
Yeah.
Idenef enclave that has been either cursed or drained to the point where they've become ethereal. You know, I really like the look of the army. It was very unique. Is that what you were looking for? What was the driver behind that?
Yeah. So it's like what we were saying with the allies. I know some people can't get it in their mind with rules to put Inlight End inside a Khorne army because it doesn't make sense to them. But to me, all of this stuff is just rules. So, but I always like to have my army looking the same theme. So like my Aether Wings are like little flying fishes. My Heart Renders were the same ghosty guys with the wings and everything like that. I just try to make it all fit so it all looks like it was definitely...
Yeah, I mean, I think the term is soup, isn't it? But you know, you avoid that look by those custom creations, yeah?
Yeah. So I do like to have... I know a joke about... It's a joke if people say I'm a fluff gamer, but I definitely like to have the same kind of theme when it comes to looks and modelling. I do love the modelling side of things. I like it way more than painting. Building and converting is a large part of what I like to do.
Yeah. How about you, Jack? How much does your army need to be unique in your mind?
It kind of depends. Like, because if I find an army where I like the look of the army in itself, so like my Nurgle and my Daughters of Cain, I feel like it's almost criminal changing them because the models themselves are so nice. So I kind of look for a paint scheme that makes it different. So with the Daughters of Cain, they've all got like colour shifting paints on the snake, so it looks like scales that move in the light.
Mm.
My Nurgle, I've gone with this putrescent pale colour, and they've got cool bases and stuff like that. But I think sometimes if I don't like the look of the army, then it needs changing. So, for example, I wanted to do a Death Army, and I'd been reading Nefrata and the Undying King, and that character really stuck out for me. Her guile and her secrets and lies. I really liked her character, but I've never been a big fan of Legions of Nagash, you know, the hordes of skeletons and zombies. It never really did it for me. So I kind of, you know, I was digging around and I found Soulblight, you know, vampires. I've always loved vampires. I've been a big vampire fan, you know, the classic Dracula tales. And I was like, oh, okay, I could do an entire army of vampires, but how am I going to do that? And I started looking around and I noticed the Blood Knights were horrible. And I was like, oh, I don't want to do Blood Knights. And then I remember in the book that Nefrata had full female, so everything was a female, you know, all her vampires were female.
Right.
So I was like, oh, that's actually a really cool idea, an entire female Soulblight army. So how can I do that? You know, I start with Nefrata and reposing her to make her look predatorial, because at the end of the day, that's what she is. She is a predator.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, the Blood Knights, how am I going to do this? And I'm like, I don't want them to be male. So I was like, oh, okay, the Sisters of Silence from Heresy. You know, they've got this really cool plate armor. I can put them on horses, and suddenly I've got this female vampire army escalating. And then I got to the Vargeist, and I was like, oh, these, I don't really like them. They just look like flesh eaters. So I was like, what can I do with Vargeist? I was like, oh, how about that? They are male, actually, but these are the males that Nefrata's only half turned. So they're savage and horrible. So I got the Furies, and I was like, I'll put two...
from Warcry.
Yeah, from Warcry. So I was like, I'll put two Furies on a base, give them like ghoulish heads and bone daggers. So they're kind of like, you know, Nefrata won't turn the males because she doesn't respect males. So to her, they're just mindless tools that
she uses.
So
normally it's a single large model on a 50mm base. You're mounting two of the Furies on a base, kind of hopping and flying around
each other. Yeah, hopping and flying over each other like a swarm, so it makes sense.
What about the look and feel? You change the heads over?
Ghoul heads and give them ghoul hands and stuff.
Okay, cool.
So for me, if I like the look of the army, then I'm like, okay, I'll just do that army, so, you know, like Beast Claw Raiders. I enjoy the look of Beast Claw Raiders, so I don't want to change them to anything. I mean, I change a couple of things, you know, I make some chariots here and there. But if I don't like the look of the army, I'm like, how can I make this more acceptable for me? How can I enjoy this army? Because at the end of the day, if you don't enjoy the models, there's no point doing it.
Yeah, and you do have to invest a lot of time in, you know, I've just, in the last 24 hours, seen you pick up 60... Plague bearers. And just get on it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible the pace you're working at. Luke, we've talked a little bit, quite a lot there about where Jack's going with his next two armies. He's working on Nurgle. He's driving into some kind of Soulblight army. I know that you've had a little bit of corn demons floating around, but what's the focus for you?
At the moment, just I'm adding to the Ideneth for what I've got left. Not the less so competitive stuff. Some sharks and turtles, and then I'm going to try and get this cities list built and ready for Rowan. And then I'm always looking and writing lists for all sorts of armies.
Yeah.
But it's hard to, for me, it's really hard to concentrate on a list when I don't really know what's going off in the tournament scene. So that kind of, what I'm going to do next is hard to do until we know what's going off with tournaments and stuff. Because that's what really drives me with my lists.
Yeah, that's a good point, isn't it? We're in the absence of a tournament scene, and you know, ultimately this hobby is quite a social hobby as well. I mean, we've been lucky because myself and Jack are self-isolated into the same house, which means we've been able to continue to do battle reports.
Yeah,
And we're still playing
continue
together.
The hobby.
But I do feel for a lot of hobbyists out there who love gaming who've got to make a tough decision. Stay safe, save the NHS, save lives, etc.
Yeah.
Or go out for a game of Warhammer. I mean, you know, the good side is the hobby is more than just gaming, but you're right. There's a lot of gamers at the moment sat on their dice wondering when this thing's going to clear up.
Okay, guys, so I think that's we've covered quite a lot of the basis of how to build a list and how we go about building lists, so maybe we should call it a night now and we'll go in for get ready for the next episode.
Yeah. I mean, we'll have to have a think about what we're going to cover on the next episode. I just want to add as well, if people want to leave any comments or leave us a voicemail, there's links on the description of the podcast if you want to leave a voicemail and make some suggestions for subjects. That'd be fantastic. But no, thank you, Luke.
Yeah. And obviously get in contact on Twitter, on Instagram, and through the website. Yeah, it'd be brilliant to get some feedback, and even email us if you want any help with writing lists. I'm willing to help you. No worries.
Oh, Luke, you've opened the floodgates there. But I know you like building lists, so yeah, sure, why not? If people want to reach out to you and ask for advice on a list, just be prepared. Everything I've ever said to Luke, he's just told me to put in the bin. But you know what? It's always very sage and wise advice that follows after. That's what's most annoying about it. All right. Thanks, man.
All right. Okay. Cheers, guys. And I'll see you soon.
All right. We'll see everyone soon.
See
Bye.
You later. What?
Thank you for tuning into Combat Gauge, the official Wargamer Online podcast. If you want to check out more of our content, you can find us on YouTube/WargamerOnline or Twitter and Instagram @WargamerOnline. Alternatively, you can leave us a voice message at anchor.fm/WargamerOnline. Don't forget to check out our premium content on our dedicated wargaming website, www.wargameronline.com.